Dog Works Radio Network presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.7 in the Matsu Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site, and you can find all of our episodes over on iTunes. Just search for Dog Works Radio. You can also find us all over social media, searching with the same name, Dog Works Radio. We are starting our nightly Iditarod coverage to the 2017 Iditarod, and calling in from California is my co-host. His name is Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great, Robert. It was really exciting watching the ceremonial start this morning. Just a lot of really wonderful energy. A lot of people very, very excited to see all of the mushers, both their old favorites and the newer mushers and the rookies. And it is quite the spectacle for the ceremonial start every year.
It is the spectacle. I didn't get a chance to head down there today. I was out on the trail setting trail for our expedition, 145 odd miles, a beautiful weekend out there on some of the same trail that the Iditarod usually runs on, but they're going up to Fairbanks this year, so we had to go out and mark all the trail for our guys. So what's happening in the next couple of days? I know we had the ceremonial start today, and then it's a travel day tomorrow. They have to drive about 350 miles north to Fairbanks, and then they will start there on Monday. Do they start at 2 o'clock like they do here in Willow, or is it later?
I think it's actually earlier. I may be wrong, but I think they start at 10 on Monday.
Okay. And what
so
do you,
usually,
what do you,
you
know about – go ahead.
I was going to say usually when we have the normal Sunday start, they start at Sunday at 2 o'clock in Willow, and Willow is about 70 miles from Anchorage, more or less. So that's
right.
You know, a lot of the people who are coming from somewhere else, from Fairbanks or from other parts of the state or other states or countries, will be camped out in Anchorage for the ceremonial start and then go up to Willow for the restart. Because, as you mentioned, it's about 350 miles up to Fairbanks, so you need a longer time to travel. So basically, Sunday is a travel day, and I would have to think that would both make things a little bit better and a little bit worse, because if you only have a limited amount of time from say Saturday afternoon until Sunday morning to get ready and get everything packed up and out on Willow Lake for the restart, that puts a lot of pressure on you. So I think
right.
that if you have the extra day, then maybe today or this evening you might feel like you can relax a little bit. But there's also, you know, that means that tomorrow everything has to be in place, and you have to get the 350 miles up to Fairbanks.
It's not an easy drive by any stretch of the imagination. You're heading due north, quite a bit of pretty treacherous travel up that way. Have you driven from Anchorage to Fairbanks, Alex?
I have. I'm not sure if you know this, but I have been almost everywhere in Alaska that's on the road system.
Excellent.
When I first came to Alaska, I rented a car in Anchorage and drove pretty much everywhere, including a few places. I'm not sure I was supposed to take the rental car, but perhaps the statute of limitations has expired on that by now.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about what happened today. For folks that are very familiar with Iditarod, we all know that it's a 12-mile run through the city streets of Anchorage. That is when the Iditariders take part in their fun and games. They typically sit in the first sled with the musher, and then they will run through the streets there, cross over a decent-sized bridge, and head through the woods and end up at the Campbell Airstrip, like I said, about 12 miles away. But I have to talk a little bit about the Iditariders, if we can, Alex. I don't know if you really took notice of a lot of these folks, but, man, they're bundled up like they're ready for an Arctic expedition. I've never seen anybody so bundled up and ready to go like some of these guys were. And here I am outside a few minutes ago in a short-sleeve shirt and a pair of pajama pants.
Yeah, but, you know, you're of hardy Alaskan stock by this point. A lot of the Iditariders
right.
are people who are long-term fans. Many of them come from out of state. For those of you who aren't that familiar with it, the Iditariders will bid on the opportunity to ride in the sleds, and they pay anywhere from, I think, about $1,000 to around $7,500 to ride in these sleds for this first part of the Iditarod and the ceremonial start. And they have a special lunch with the mushers on Friday. It's a fundraising tool for the Iditarod itself. The Iditarod, as we've talked about many times, is not only an expensive race for people to enter, it's a pretty expensive race to put on. There is a lot of things and people and supplies have to be flown all over the place, and that's not an inexpensive thing to do. So, a lot of these people are perhaps people who've been coming up and volunteering, or perhaps people who have it on their bucket list that they want to be an Iditarider. But it's a fun time, and, you know, lately everyone has their cell phones and their cameras out, and it's really kind of a party atmosphere.
Talking about it right before we aired about the video with Jeff King, he took a nice little spill there heading around that corner, didn't he?
Yeah, and that corner is it's kind of well known over the years for sometimes people will take pretty good spills going around that corner. When the restart happens, the teams can have up to 16 dogs. I believe for this part of the race, it's only 12 dogs.
Right.
But nonetheless, 12 dogs can get you going pretty fast, and that's why frequently a lot of teams will also have a second sled called a drag sled to try to just slow the teams down a little bit.
Right. I noticed our friend Hugh Neff, he had his Iditarider in his sled, and he was sitting on the caboose portion. Then he had a tag sled behind him with another person sitting in that. So that those 12 dogs were pulling four people and two sleds on that 12-mile trek. That's saying something. Those dogs are pretty powerful if they can pull all that weight through the city streets there.
Yeah, and as people may know, I'm kind of fascinated with the idea that the first part of the Iditarod literally runs through the city streets, and they block off the streets on Friday afternoon, and then they will truck in tons of snow, and they'll put snow on the streets where the teams actually run, and in between the teams running, on the cross streets, the streets that are going up and down as opposed to across, they'll have traffic guards and cars will actually come through between the teams, and then they have volunteers who will put more snow there so that the next dog team can come through.
Right. And, you know, they park several blocks apart from the start, and I've been down there in the pit many times and trying to run a antsy dog team several blocks to that starting line. I've seen I don't know how many people face plant falling down and getting a face full of snow on many occasions trying to get to that start line. It's tough holding back a team of 12 dogs. It's even tougher holding back a team of dogs where you can't set a brake or a hook or anything, because just a couple inches below that snow is asphalt.
Right. And not only that, but you have you have an enormous number of dogs who are all in a very, very small space. So you'll have 72 teams with 12 dogs apiece. So, you know, that's almost 1,000 dogs right there. And,
right.
You know, the dogs will all get excited and they'll start barking when there are other dogs that are coming by that they know are going to run. And sometimes just keeping the dogs, you know, managing the level of excitement of your dog team while you're waiting to go can be something that is a bit of a challenge as well.
So I didn't get a chance to see much of the video. I mentioned Jeff and Hugh, but you had mentioned that it's a big party down there today. Did you happen to see anything that really stood out? You know, you typically see folks like Jeff. He'll, you know, in years past, he's had, you know, the great big freight sleds with the furs and, you know, all of that sort of stuff. Did anything stand out to you when you were watching?
Well, you know, I love all of the traditions and the pageantry of the ceremonial start. So before the actual teams get running, the first team that ran was Ryan Reddington, who had bib number two. Bib number one is the honorary musher, and the winner of the junior Iditarod, I believe, is the runs the first sled. There is usually most years there is a native musical or dance group that performs right before all of the teams started, and that happened this year. In the course of about maybe six or seven blocks downtown, there usually will be between 15,000 and 20,000 people there. For people listening from outside Alaska may not be aware that, you know, Alaska is relatively small in terms of population, about 750,000 people. But of course gigantic in terms of area. And about half the people who live in Alaska live in or around Anchorage. So, you know, it's a pretty big town, at least by Alaska standards, probably a medium sized town by the standards of the rest of the U.S., but you have about 375,000 people there, and a lot of them go downtown, and then you make the big turn down Cordova Street, and it goes down a very steep hill, and then it goes off into the woods by the creek. There's always a lot of people out in the woods. There are people who go to the same spot in the woods every year, and they have they have cookouts and they have, you know, people with hot dogs and there may be some drinking there. I'm not sure if we're supposed to talk about that, but sometimes people are drinking in the woods and they're passing out hot dogs and pastries and things like that to the teams that are coming by. And I love all of those kind of things. And because it's only the ceremonial start, you're required to complete these 12 miles, but they don't keep track of the time and it doesn't count in terms of the competitiveness of the race. All you have to do is start and finish at Campbell Airstrip.
Right. Do you remember a couple of years ago, Alex, I believe it was Ed Strelstra, he scratched after the ceremonial start. Like we said, it doesn't count for anything. It's really just a fun run, but didn't he have some kind of head injury or something? I don't know if it happened during the start or right before, but I remember him scratching on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, it may have been on a training run or it may have been on the Yukon Quest. I'm not exactly sure, but he had a head injury, but he wanted to complete the first 12 miles, and he didn't want to disappoint his Iditarider who had paid a lot of money to be in his sled. But he knew that he could do that in a relatively controlled area where if anything happened, there would be a lot of people around, but didn't feel that he was physically up to going 1,000 miles on the Iditarod Trail. So that's actually a very cool thing that he did. because he was able to honor the person who was his Iditarider and complete the first part of the race, but also knew that it wasn't safe and it wasn't a good idea for him to complete the whole race. So I have a lot of admiration to him for doing that.
A very expensive 12 miles, wasn't it?
Yes, very much so.
because he lives in Michigan, so he had to drive up here to take part in that. So that really talks about his character to be able to do something like that, to travel all the way up here from the lower 48 just to make sure that that his fans and all of his supporters were taken care of by doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in looking at the field this year, we've talked a lot on Mushing Radio in the past few months about how well the women are doing in various races leading up to Iditarod. We have this year out of 72 teams competing, there are 17 women who are running the race. And I think we're going to see quite a few of these women doing extremely well in the race this year, even though there's not close to half of them. I think we're going to see some very, very good finishes by the female teams.
All right, Alex. So let's talk a little bit about our picks. I know I love putting you on the spot with this. Who are your top five now that the race is about ready to go here in less than 48 hours? They will be on the trail on their way to Nome. Who are your picks?
Okay, so I am going to, with the caveat that I always get this wrong, here are my picks. I am going to say that this is the year Ali Zirkel is going to win the Iditarod. And I know I've said that before, and it has not happened, but that is my pick for Ali to come in first. I think second will be Jeff King. Third, Dallas Stevie. Fourth, Mitch Seavey. And then for my fifth-place team, I would have to pick your Olsom.
Very nice. Well, I probably have most of the same folks as you. I am going to pick Wade Mars to be in fifth, Ali Zirkel to be in fourth, Dallas Seavey to be in third, as you mentioned, Mitch Seavey to be in second, and Nick Pettit to win it this year. That's a big, long shot, but that's my
pick.
Wow. Yes.
That is
– He has it.
That's –
Yes, he has had one heck of a year coming up to it, and you know, I don't know. I think it might be time for him to, you know, to really put the throttle down, and I think he might be able to do it. We'll see. Like we said, we're typically wrong, but I think we have a few picks in there that are pretty good.
Yeah, I actually like the Nick Pettit pick. I think that's a very, very strong one. And as you said, he's been doing extremely, extremely well this year. His team, in all of the races I've seen that he's been in, his team has just looked fantastic. So, you know, it's a different thing to do, as we know, to do a 1,000-mile race than a 300-mile race. But it would certainly shake things up a tremendous amount if he were to win.
So, excuse me, do you happen to have a rookie pick for this year? It doesn't have the list like it normally does here on Iditarod.com. You know, once the race gets started, it gives them in a sort of a chronological list. Do you have a rookie that you're really eyeing out this year, hoping to do very well?
Yes. You know, I don't know as much about the rookies as I probably should, but I would love to see Laura Neese, whom we've talked about in past shows a little bit, who is Ed Steelstra's kennel partner. I would love to see her do really well.
I am going to go with, is it Robert Reddington's first year this year?
Yes. Yeah.
I am going to go with Robert. You can't go wrong with the Reddington name in this race. You know, his I guess that would be his grandfather is the founder of the race. I am going to pick him as my top rookie pick.
Yeah, that's a good pick. I forgot about him just because whenever I hear the name Reddington, I assume that it's someone who has you know, decades of experience in the Iditarod.
Right. I guess it's his brother Ray is always a top competitor as well as Ryan Reddington. You know, what's interesting about Ryan is he switches just about every year from sprint mushing to distance mushing, then back and forth. That takes a special kind of musher and a special breed of dog to be able to do competitive in both of those type races. I don't think he's racing this year, but he has in years past.
Yeah. You know, I just wanted to mention briefly that there was an interview that KTVA posted today with Lance Mackey at the ceremonial start, and he was very emotional about being there and about his health problems. He's had some real difficulties with his hands in the past couple of years, sort of as a side effect of some of the cancer treatments and some other health problems that he has, and says that he can't really take care of his dog team with the way his hands are now. But he mentioned that half of his dogs are running on John Baker's team and half are running on his brother Jason's team this year. So I think looking at how those two do with both the Lance Mackey dogs and the dogs that they already had, those two could be very interesting to keep an eye on as well.
Well, you know, Alex, I have a bone to pick with KTVA. They are the official channel of Iditarod, and for about a month or two now, they have been off the air on DirecTV. We pay, I don't know, $130 a month or whatever for DirecTV, and we can't even watch the nightly coverage of Iditarod on our local channel because of that. So they need to do whatever they do to make sure that happens, or they're going to be a lot of upset folks that are satellite customers.
Wow, is that still going on? I remember when that started.
Before air.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yes.
They should definitely do something about that. You know,
All right,
I know
so
we're,
we have a couple. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, we have a couple more minutes.
Yeah, so
go ahead, Alex.
I wanted to mention briefly the route this year, which is, I believe, pretty much the same route as was taken in the 2015 race when they also started from Fairbanks. So it will be Fairbanks to Nenana, Nenana to Manly Hot Springs, and then Tanana, Ruby, and then once we're back in Ruby, it's pretty much following the northern route of Iditarod, except that it goes Galena and then up to Hooslea, and down to Koyukuk, and then
right.
Nalato, Caltag, Unalakleet, Shaktulik, Koyuk, Elam, White Mountain Safety, and then into Nome. So it is, you know, we'll have that loop up to Hooslea again, which a lot of the veteran racers really, really enjoy being up in Hooslea, which has a very strong mushing history and tradition. So that is the route that we're following, and the first 60 miles or so are on the road system, I believe, and then it veers off.
And reading a quick story from Joe Runyon on Iditarod.com, it says that they just spoke to a trail guy up near Nenana, which is the first checkpoint after Fairbanks, and he says a rough trail comprised of 3 feet of loose snow blown about by winds from Minto Flats to Old Minto. No trail at all exists from Old Minto to Manly. according to my first-hand reports, more as race time nears. So that should be interesting, the first couple of days of the race, where there isn't much of a trail. You know, that route is not nearly as traveled as the the first 150 or 200 miles of the race on this side. They just had the Iron Dog Snow Machine race go through there last weekend, but it's not the traffic that's down here, is it?
No, not at all. And I think that's going to be really an interesting development, and it will. I would have to think that if there's that much snow, that it might favor some of the teams starting a little bit later, so that it would get packed down a little bit.
Right.
Does that
either
make sense,
packed down or really
am I wrong?
Really churned up, one or the other.
Oh yes, that could be the case too.
Right.
So I assume that the trail sweeps will be and the trail breakers will be out trying to pack it down and trying to get it in much better shape over the next day or two. But you know, there's only so much that they can do. At a certain point,
right,
the trail is the trail, and it just depends on how things are out there and how the weather is.
You know, that's what makes this race special. It's really you against the elements. Mother Nature does not wait for anybody, do they?
No, absolutely not. And that's what keeps it interesting. And that's, you know, frankly, that is when these gigantic changes in weather happen. That's when the people who have a lot of experience with running in a lot of different types of weather and different types of trails, they tend to do very, very well, and people who are less experienced tend to have trouble.
All right, Alex. So for our folks that have listened in the years past, every day we do sort of a Musher profile or a Musher story, and we always mention who we're going to do the day before. And we're going to be back on the air on Monday. Do you have somebody in mind who you want to profile on the first day?
Yes. I want on the first day to do Paul Gebhardt, who is
okay,
a veteran and someone that fans may be familiar with, just a really great and wonderful dog man.
So we are in the thick of it here for the next week or so. We'll be on the air just about every night. Typically we're on a little later than folks would like on the East Coast, but we always have it as a download so you can listen on your way to work the following morning. But remember, the Iditarod is a 24-hour event, so things that you hear now may change very quickly in the next few hours, but it's always good to catch up, isn't it?
Absolutely, and you know, we tend to be, especially me, I tend to be up twittering, tweeting in the middle of the night about anything that's happening, usually using the hashtag Iditarod. So follow me at Coldfoot Films and follow Robert at Robert Forto, and we will, you know, if you have things that you're interested in, let us know, and we will do our best to cover them.
Excellent. All right, Alex, we'll talk on Monday, okay?
Okay, thanks.
All right, so on behalf of my co-host, Alex Stein, we will see you guys on Monday. Goodbye.